Hey, this is John Lee Dumas from EO Fire, and you're listening to Elective Rotation with Pharmacy Joe. You must be prepared to ignite.
What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 12, How to Evaluate QTC Drug Interactions. Thank you so much to all of you who have reached out to me with words of encouragement for the show. Jill, Rich, Jeff, Todd, Jonathan, Eric, Stephen, Ben, Michaela, Terry, Michelle, Edith, Craig, Dina, Soka, Mary, Mike, thank you all. If you are enjoying the show, please tell a friend or colleague about us. And if you haven't already subscribed to my email list to be notified whenever a new episode is published, you can do so at pharmacyjoe.com/subscribe. And you'll find the show notes for today's episode at pharmacyjoe.com/episode12. Today's show is about evaluating QTC drug interactions. Prolonged QTC interval leading to torsades. It's the adverse medication event that keeps pharmacists awake at night. In this episode, I will explain how, as a hospital-based pharmacist, I evaluate drug interactions that carry the risk of QTC prolongation. This is an area of my practice that I struggled with for quite some time. It took four things to get myself in a spot where I can comfortably judge the significance of these interactions. Number one, understanding that the QTC is a number on a piece of paper and nothing more. Number two, making peace with the ECG and learning how to read and interpret it from a pharmacist's point of view. Number three, read the ACC-AHA guidelines on prevention of torsades in hospital settings. Number four, read the book, The Top 100 Drug Interactions by Hansen and Horn. Let's jump in. QTC is just a number on a piece of paper. Just because a drug interaction may prolong the QT does not mean that the patient will experience torsades. Have you ever heard the axiom, treat the patient, not the number? Nothing could be more accurate when it comes to evaluating QTC interactions. Making peace with the ECG. In episode 10, I discussed how the pharmacist and the ECG should be friends. If you haven't listened to episode 10 already and are unsure of what, from the pharmacist's perspective, you should be doing with the ECG, go ahead and listen to it now, pharmacyjoe.com/episode10. Most of the time, when evaluating a drug interaction, you can use the QTC number that you get off of a 12-lead ECG to evaluate the interaction. But knowing how to calculate the QTC yourself can be quite handy sometimes. Check out the show notes. I've got a picture and a link to ecgpedia.org to help you learn how to calculate the QTC yourself. Another trick I use, and I talked about this in episode 10, is to eyeball the QT and compare it to the R to R interval on the patient's monitor. If the QT is less than half the R to R interval, the QTC will be normal. If not, then you should investigate further by looking at the 12 lead. This allows me to save time not crunching numbers or looking at 12 leads for those patients who clearly have a normal ECG. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about the article I mentioned earlier by ACC-AHA titled Prevention of Torsades in a Hospital Setting. This paper was published in Circulation 2010, and I think it's a must read for a hospital-based pharmacist. It covers what torsades looks like, ECG signs that indicate risk of torsades, how torsades originates, drugs that cause torsades, monitoring and management of torsades should it occur. I'm going to talk briefly about a few highlights from the article. First, how torsades originates. The short of it is this. Ventricular repolarization is abnormally prolonged. That's your prolonged QT interval. And in that setting, an early after depolarization occurs during the prolonged repolarization phase. This results in the ventricles going haywire, with reentry and multiple foci causing abnormal ventricular depolarization and the non-perfusing life-threatening rhythm of torsades. The best analogy I have for this is this scene from the movie Ghostbusters, where they talk about crossing the streams.
Broke the fall.
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
What?
Don't cross the streams.
Why?
It would be bad.
I'm fuzzy on the whole good bad thing. What do you mean bad?
Try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Total protonic reversal.
All right, that's bad. Okay. All right, important safety tip. Thanks, Egon. All right, Ray, take the left. Egon, take the right.
I know I'm dating myself with that movie, but hopefully you'll find it. You can check the video of that clip out in the show notes. Now, drugs that cause torsades is also covered extensively in this article. And the article makes a great point. QT prolongation is not necessarily equivalent to arrhythmogenicity. The only class of drugs for which reasonable torsades incidence data are available are the antiarrhythmic agents. Sodium and potassium channel blockers, that's quinidine, disopyramide, and procainamide, and potassium channel blockers, sotalol, dofetilide, ibutilide, those are the biggest culprits when it comes to torsades. Now, the authors take a very interesting stance on amiodarone. They state, chronic administration of amiodarone markedly prolongs the QT interval, yet it is very rarely associated with torsades. They propose a few theories on why this is true, but then they take things a step further. You might be familiar with the website qtdrugs.org. That's put out by the Arizona Center for Education and Research on Therapeutics. Well, the authors of this article in Circulation specifically remove amiodarone from the qtdrugs.org list when they propose their own list of drugs known to have a risk of causing torsades. Now, this has a significant impact on how you would evaluate a QTC interaction in the hospital, as so many of these interactions have to do with amiodarone. The article also covers how to manage torsades. I'll cover it here briefly for completeness sake. The authors of the article state, for patients with torsades that doesn't terminate spontaneously or that degenerates into V-fib, you use immediate direct current cardioversion, and then you give 2 grams of IV push magnesium sulfate, irrespective of the magnesium level. Transcutaneous pacing to keep the rate at 70 beats per minute or higher, and potassium replacement may also be considered. The fourth point that really helped me get a handle on QTC interactions is Hansen and Horn's book, Top 100 Drug Interactions. Now, I've definitely saved the best for last here. I have used this great handbook for over 7 years, and I highly recommend it. The authors do a fantastic job, not just with QTC interactions, but with drug interactions in general, where they sort through the ocean of G-Wiz and test tube drug interactions, and they come up with those interactions which are actually clinically significant. They have an entire section on QTC interactions, and the handbook is well worth the $20 you'll pay for it on Amazon. The book is also available on the mobile platform Skyscape, but I really advise against using the digital format. I've tried it. It is much more difficult to navigate, and it's a lot slower to use compared to the paperback version. Check out the show notes. You can find a link to this book in Amazon, pharmacyjoe.com/episode12. Now, drawing strongly from Hansen and Horn's book and the other resources I mentioned, here is how I evaluate any QTC interaction I come across. It's 3 steps. Step 1, determine the risk of the interaction. Step 2, determine patient-specific risk factors. Step 3, make a decision. So for step 1, determining the risk of the interaction, I do this by breaking down drugs that prolong the QT into 1 of 2 categories. Drugs I'll call category 1 are those that prolong the QT or cause torsades at therapeutic levels. These drugs are essentially the antiarrhythmics like sotalol and quinidine, but some other drugs make their way into this list. you'll need to make some personal decisions here. Hanston and Horn list amiodarone as one of these Category 1 drugs, but the circulation paper does not. I personally move high-dose methadone to this list as well. The second category of drugs is those that prolong the QT at elevated concentrations. This includes antipsychotics, quinolones, macrolides. Now, one of the reasons I love the Hanston and Horn book is because they go out on a limb and they leave ciprofloxacin off this list completely. That leaves me an option of a quinolone still to use when trying to navigate a QTC interaction. Now that you have your drug split into these two categories, you can get a better handle on what the risk is. Hanston and Horn spell this out in greater detail, but I agree. Absolutely don't use any two drugs from Category 1 together. And don't use together any combination of drugs from Category 1 that have a pharmacokinetic interaction with a drug from Category 2. Some examples of that would be combining sotalol and quinidine or quinidine and clarithromycin. It just doesn't make sense under any circumstance. Any other combinations have varying risk of QT prolongation and torsades. An attempt should be made to find alternative drugs to use or to monitor the patient appropriately. With these combinations that are not absolutely contraindicated, I delve deeper into identifying patient-specific factors, and that's step two. So when I'm determining patient-specific risk factors, I really want to think about, are these risks modifiable or non-modifiable? Modifiable risk factors for QT prolongation and torsades are hypomagnesemia, hypokalemia, and to a certain extent, bradycardia. Non-modifiable risk factors, hypertrophy, heart failure, female gender, advanced age, a QTC over 500 milliseconds at baseline. And I add this on my own. It's not in Hanston Horn's book, but a history of ventricular arrhythmias. And then step three, it's time to make a decision. Depending on the drugs and the degree of risk factors involved, I will push harder to find an alternative for the interacting drug, or I'll simply monitor. Now, there's two things that I keep in mind here. Number one, be risk averse whenever possible. Take, for example, a patient with no allergies on sotalol prescribed levofloxacin for community-acquired pneumonia. As long as their renal function is good, this is a pretty low-risk interaction that you could just monitor. But ceftriaxone plus doxycycline is just as good for CAP and completely avoids the risk of torsades. Why would I take the risk when I have another first-line treatment that doesn't include the risk of torsades and doesn't really add any risks beyond it? Things get murkier when you're having to decide between using a second-line drug versus monitoring the interaction. Take the same patient, but give them anaphylaxis to penicillin. Would vancomycin plus aztreonam plus doxycycline provide the best cure for their pneumonia? How do I balance the added risk of toxicity that using vancomycin brings? Sticking with the levofloxacin and monitoring the patient in the hospital might be more reasonable here. And this brings me to my second point. ECGs are cheap and non-invasive. You should have no hesitation asking for one or multiple on a daily basis if the purpose is to evaluate or monitor a QT drug interaction. Literally, the cost of the hospital is ink and paper. The machine and the technician to do it has already been paid for and is a fixed cost that doesn't enter into the equation. I really encourage you to take a look at the ACC-AHA paper as well as the Hanston and Horn book. I guarantee that if you do so, you'll never lose a night's sleep over a QT interaction again. I'd love to continue this conversation on how to evaluate drug interactions with QTC risk on Twitter. Tweet about this episode and how you evaluate QT interactions using the hashtag RxJ12. That's for Pharmacy Joe 12, hashtag RxJ12. And please take a moment to subscribe and rate the show in iTunes. Doing so is one of the best ways to help others find the show. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.